Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Roughly 3,500 Ohio residents are approved and waiting to take part in a program that was years in the making. We're talking about the state's role and how Ohio got to medical marijuana. Joining us by phone is experienced education leader at Leaf Medic. That's a training platform for dispensaries. Karen Korn, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Director of Policy and Communication at the Ohio Board of Pharmacy, Cameron McNamee. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Cameron, what's your latest ballpark date for when eligible Ohioans will be permitted and able to buy medical cannabis?
Sure. So we just actually announced yesterday a new laboratory that's coming on board that will help facilitate the testing that's necessary before the product can get to patients. So, I mean, obviously, I can't put a fine stamp on it, tell you this date that everything will be ready to go, because it's mostly a business decision at this point, how fast the laboratories can do the testing, how fast the cultivators can get the product to the testing labs and then turn it around to the dispensaries. Mm-hmm. But we're hopeful, you know, hopefully in the next month that there will be product available on shelves. Certainly, we want to temper expectations and say that there will be probably only plant-based product available initially. And then, you know, once the processors get up and on board, there will be the other forms available to patients. And certainly we currently only have one dispensary that has been cleared by the board to be able to sell. But we're working on another four final inspections this month as well to onboard some new dispensaries to provide better access to patients.
Is there a sense that as the board itself and the people who do the clearance of the dispensary, I mean, is it going to get faster?
Yeah, so it's right now we have set forth all of the parameters for the program. We've issued all the provisional licenses. We've met with dispensary owners. We had a big meeting in June to sort of give them our expectations of what they have to meet. And now it's a process of working with them to get them up to speed and get them approved. And so we have dedicated staff that are regional. So we've broken our dispensary divisions into four regions. So we have staff dedicated to each of those dispensaries in those regions so that they can assist them in answering any questions they have, so that they can pass their final inspections upon the first final inspection, rather than having to go back and do corrective plans to try and get those dispensaries up and running as fast as possible.
Are you seeing any trends in the hang-ups? I mean, so the things that they're I hate to use the word struggle, but mm-hmm. I mean, the things that are more challenging than others.
So we've heard, it can vary. It can vary from having to do facility modification, so there's construction hang-ups, or having to meet certain requirements that have been set forth by localities. So it's a various number of issues. There's IT involved in terms of getting data to be reported to our seed-to-sale system.
Inventory-type data, that kind of thing?
Inventory-type data. They're also required to report to the Ohio Automated ARCS reporting system, which is the state's prescription drug monitoring program, within 5 minutes of a sale. And that's to obviously prevent people from trying to go from one dispensary to the other to get more product than they're legally allowed to have. So there's a number of different hang-ups that folks have, and we're just trying to work with industry to resolve those and get them up and running.
And that prescription drug monitoring program, that's already in place.
Yes. Yeah, so that collects data from drugs that are controlled substances that are dispensed by pharmacies now. And what that's going to do is, one, that will give the dispensary employees the ability to see whether or not somebody has purchased from another dispensary already, because they're only allowed a maximum 90-day supply at any given time. And then it also allows clinicians to see if a patient that they're treating with a controlled substance is also utilizing medical marijuana, and provide them a clearer picture of what that patient is taking.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the rollout now of medical marijuana in Ohio. It's a matter of probably weeks. My guest, Cameron McNamee, is Director of Policy and Communication at the Ohio Board of Pharmacy. It's one of three agencies working on this larger program. Cameron just said that within the month, it should be available in some locations. Also with us, Karen Korn. She is an experienced education leader at Leaf Medic. That's a training platform for dispensaries. Karen Korn, what do you train the dispensary employees to do? What is it that you're telling them to do?
Well, the Ohio Board of Pharmacy, as well as the Department of Commerce, have put together a portion of the revised code that guides everybody who is interested in opening a dispensary or participating in the industry at all in terms of the legal parameters. And so we constructed an online curriculum for dispensary technicians where they would be able to learn all about all of the requirements in the revised code, as well as some basics about the endocannabinoid system and, basic drug interaction information, the types of things that somebody who would be talking to a patient and helping a patient make decisions about how to best use cannabis medicine would need to know.
Is this the same sort of thing, Cameron McNamee, that an assistant in a pharmacy would know?
So a pharmacy technician.
Is there any parallels, I guess, average consumer can draw to this?
Yeah, I mean, we just started actually registering and pharmacy technicians in the state of Ohio. And yeah, there are certainly parallels to what a pharmacy technician should know. However, I think the dispensary training is a little bit more focused. So, for instance, the drug interactions wouldn't be something a pharmacy technician is aware of. That's ultimately the pharmacist to make that decision. So there are some parallels in terms of what our training requires in terms of, you know, compliance with laws and packaging and those kinds of things. But there's also things that would mostly be reserved for a pharmacist or a pharmacy intern.
Karen Korn, how much discretion does as far as you understand, nothing's open yet, but how much discretion does a pharmacy or I'm sorry, a dispensary employee have in making, okay, the doctor makes the recommendation to the patient for something. What's the universe beyond that that the technician or the dispensary employee manages?
So this is kind of an interesting part of the program. The way that it works is a patient has already established relationships with other doctors that have been treating them for a condition in the past, mm-hmm. and then they initiate a new relationship with a recommending physician who has been approved by the Board of Pharmacy here in Ohio, or I think it's the Medical Board as well. And so when they begin that relationship, that physician assesses their eligibility for medical cannabis in
whether
Ohio.
They fit one of the 21 conditions.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so then the patient and that doctor establish that relationship, and the patient is then put through the system at the Board of Pharmacy and issued their card, their medical marijuana card. Mm-hmm. And that card permits them access to a dispensary. And when they go to a dispensary, they go in, and I'm really speaking hypothetically because, of course, I've not
right.
seen this happen
Understood,
yet.
Understood, yeah.
But yeah, I'm speaking in reference to what I know about other states. Mm-hmm. So, but what would happen is the patient would go in and they have an allotted amount that they're, you know, allowed to purchase at one time. They would talk to the dispensary worker about their need and explain their, you know, basically their condition. And then that dispensary worker would help them make a wise selection for treating the particular condition that they have. The amount of information that they are, you know, permitted to give is relative, I think, to specifically the products that they're working with. They're not, you know, permitted to provide medical counsel. So this is kind of a gray area in terms of, you know, them understanding what the patient needs and then them offering them a selection of products to choose from. And so Leaf Medic, the way that we fit into this is we are working on training dispensary technicians as well as doctor's offices who will not necessarily be writing recommendations, but doctor's offices that would be working with patients that would perhaps want medical marijuana as well as other kinds of treatment modalities. So, for example, if you have multiple sclerosis mm-hmm. and you're seeing a neurologist and your neurologist is not interested in becoming a recommending physician, but they would like to see you potentially experience some benefit from medical cannabis, mm-hmm. they would perhaps say, okay, go to a recommending physician, get the card, you can get the cannabis. And then if their staff doesn't understand, that's where we come in and we want to try and help those clinical practices be able to help their patients better sort of figure that out, as well as working with patients, because a lot of patients don't understand how to dose themselves with medical
right.
cannabis.
Cameron McNamee, how are people supposed to know? The doctor doesn't say, mm-hmm. take 3 pills a day. They don't do that. They just say, we think medical marijuana may be beneficial to you. Then it's up to the patient and the dispensary to decide, depending on what's available. Mm-hmm. And how do they do that?
So we require what's called foundational training, as the other guest alluded to be able to basically provide the basics in all aspects of the program, including different strains that are available and forms and methods that are
available.
And
there are standards?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we actually have to approve all of those training components. So we have staff dedicated to reviewing all of the training components to ensure that they meet a very robust standard and a uniform standard, because we want patients to be able to go to whatever dispensary they choose and get quality care. I think that what we have learned from other states is the whole start low, go slow approach. And that I think patients are really going to have to, and that's why, you know, they can purchase a 90-day supply, but most likely they're going to purchase a small amount going forward and see, you know, which strain works best for them in terms of what, you know, its content between CBD and THC, as well as, you know, which form works best for them. Because there are a number of different forms. There's lotions, ointments, patches, pills, oils, tinctures. They can vape it. They can even buy plant material as well. So, I mean, I think it's a matter of working with your dispensary to see, you know, what is best for you. And it may require a little trial and error.
You said, and I wanted to ask something, you said plant-based is available only mm-hmm. now. That means just the actual plant?
Well, initially that will probably be the only product that's available, because the cultivators are up and running and they'll be able to take that material, have it tested at a laboratory, and get it on store shelves.
More immediately, yeah.
Now, in terms of timeline, you know, I think I also want to be clear, it is going to be industry driven. So, you know, what we expect is that the skeleton there, the framework is there. But again, you know, there could be, we encourage patients to contact the local dispensaries that do have their certificate of operations to see if there's product available, because we certainly don't want folks to, you know, drive all the way out east to go to the first dispensary out in Wernersville and, you know, there not be product available.
Right.
So we encourage folks to contact those dispensaries as well to see if there is product, because again, we can only do so much, and then it's up to industry to determine what the timeline of product is.
Kieran Korn, what are there any things that are popping up repeatedly among the folks that you're trying to train by way of this online curriculum that is harder to grasp than other things? I mean, what are you seeing?
Well, so far, I would say that the majority of people that we've engaged with regarding the training for dispensary work have been very positively receptive to the information that they're receiving about the medical capacity of cannabis. I think a lot of people who are interested in working in dispensaries are people who perhaps have had a fondness for cannabis in the past, or like traveled, or, you know, had experience with it elsewhere. And some of them are people who maybe did not understand the medical aspect of it. So I think that what I'm finding are people who are surprised and excited. There's a lot of passion. I haven't seen a ton of problems yet, because honestly, none of the employees that we have been training have had the opportunity to work yet.
Right, so they haven't put it to work, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be a give and take process, but we'll get feedback from dispensary owners who will report to us that, you know, we think that these employees need to know more of this, or back off on that. They really don't need to know that sort of thing. I'm hoping that over time we develop a lovely, robust training program that's affordable and easy to access, and, you know, allows people to continue to update their knowledge as research is published, because that's the beauty of this industry. It's just getting started.
Yeah, right.
There's so much to learn for all of us.
One, you know, option, Cameron McNamee, is for people to go to other states that mm-hmm. already have up and running programs. Mm-hmm. And the law does, in Ohio, requires the Board of Pharmacy to negotiate with other states mm-hmm. on reciprocity agreements for medical marijuana cards. How much progress has been made on that score?
To my knowledge, we've done some outreach to programs. I think there are, you know, there's a lot of uncertainties in terms of interstate cooperation, because again, it is still a Schedule I controlled substance.
Right. The federal laws.
Federal laws. there are certainly some concerns in that regard. But we have done the initial outreach to those programs to see if they are interested. To my knowledge, I don't think we've received anything back from them as of yet. And they may also be limited by their own state law in terms of honoring.
Not all states are the.
Right. Because every program is different in the way it functions. And so and what the law allows.
But it would help with rollout if people could go elsewhere. In the meantime?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, there is an affirmative defense provision that was put into the law. That's something that we don't necessarily get into because that's more of a legal issue. But certainly that would assist folks. But again, we are just focused on getting our own industry up and running.
About 3,500 people have their medical marijuana cards now.
Actually, 6,654 of yesterday. I pulled some numbers for you.
Given those numbers, mm-hmm. Yeah, Karen Korn?
Oh, I just laughed. I was like, I'm one of them.
Yeah.
I'm half my
of the, you know, given those numbers at this point mm-hmm. in the process, what are your expectations? What are you looking at as far as the number of people in Ohio that are eventually going to be carrying these cards?
Sure. So it's hard to predict in terms of how quickly. What we've learned from other states, and we did a lot of outreach to other states, and we found that in the initial phases. It's a very slow sort of growth in patient population, and then after a couple of years, it tends to expand greatly. And so, you know, we were looking, you know, in terms of building or determining how many dispensaries, how many processors, how many cultivators that we needed. We looked at, you know, a very sort of smaller patient population in the beginning, mm-hmm. so as to not to give out so many licenses that. Some of these
businesses
are insolvent.
Right.
Yeah. And what's great about the program is that there's built-in flexibility where the board will review patient population every year and determine based on that whether new dispensaries need to be licensed. Same thing with the Department of Commerce. So there's flexibility to grow the program without having to go get a statute change because, you know, some states have, you know, you can only have this many dispensaries in state law.
Yeah.
The General Assembly gave us that flexibility and rule. And so we're able to grow with that patient population.
Cameron McNamee, thanks for joining us today. Sure. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
It's Cameron McNamee. He's Director of Policy and Communication at the Ohio Board of Pharmacy. And Karen Korn, I'm looking forward to talking to you and Cameron going forward to see how this rolls out. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Karen Korn is an experienced education leader at Leaf Medic. That's a training platform for dispensaries in Ohio. Coming up, we're going to continue our conversation about this rollout, what it means to the patient, what we know about the medicine of marijuana. So stay with us. If you have questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. State officials predict that medical marijuana will be available in Ohio within the month. We're talking about the nuts and bolts of both cannabis as a drug, what is known about how it works, and what patients should know. Emily Romick is CEO of Compassionate Alternatives. That's a Columbus-based nonprofit focused on helping patients across the country access medical marijuana. She joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Also, another Emily Lindley, an assistant professor at the University of Colorado. She studies the medical effects of cannabis. She's currently studying the effects of cannabis versus oxycodone. She joins us by phone. Welcome to the show, Professor Lindley.
Thank you. Good to be here.
All in all, Professor Lindley, how do you rate the universe of evidence-based medical marijuana research? Where are we at right now?
I think it depends on which condition you're looking at, but overall, I think we're pretty early for everything. In particular, I am studying pain. And in that realm, most of the clinical trials of cannabinoid-based medicine have typically in the past focused on cancer pain and only more recently have branched out and looked at other areas And to date, mostly it's been neuropathic pain that has been studied, which is why, in my case in particular, I'm in orthopedics and work with patients who have chronic back and neck pain. So we were interested in learning whether it's really appropriate in that patient population as well.
And when you talk about neuropathic, you mean a headache?
No, neuropathic pain is when you have an injury to the central peripheral nervous system, so more like nerve fiber injury, as opposed to where you have an area where your nerve where your pain receptors are being activated and you're in pain. So different from a back pain and neck pain is not the same as like a diabetic neuropathy is an example of neuropathic pain.
Your work you're working on right now a study. Study the benefits of cannabis versus the addictive opioid oxycodone. And I'm wondering, is this the kind of research that you expect will be used as evidence going forward for everyday people who want to use it?
Definitely. Okay. I mean, our patients are coming in and asking, whether it's appropriate for them to use, and we don't really have any evidence for them, and that's what spurred our interest in this. And we know our patients are using it here in Colorado and trying it, but we don't really have any way of giving them real advice on what's the best way to treat their pain.
Emily, your work spans the country.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Where medical marijuana is already legal. What evidence have you seen that it helps? What can you tell us about what you've seen in other states and how people are responding to it?
Well, absolutely. As we know, on the West Coast, they've had a kind of like a head start almost on the medical research. I was just out in Portland for the Cannabis Science Conference out there and got to more or less work closely with a few of the scientists that were presenting out there. And a lot of the data that they basically presented more or less just has proven that depending on certain debilitating diseases or, depending on like your inflammation and chronic pain, it really comes down to strain specific. So Charlotte's Web, obviously is a huge one for pain specifically, but they're coming out with more and more data on the West Coast and even just all around the world, essentially. Dr. Sue Sicily, she's from Phoenix, Arizona. She's done a lot of work as far as studying federally on medical marijuana. Paul and Charlene Maver, they're from Australia. They came out and had some incredible studies. Sebastian Cott, he's from Atlanta, Georgia. Those are just a few. In Portland, the Cannabis Science Conference was really incredible.
Dr. Lindley, you're funded by the state of Colorado. There aren't very many federally funded research, any kind of projects out there, all things being equal, right?
Actually, I think it's growing a lot more than in the past. It's been fairly limited, especially if you're looking at potential therapeutic purposes.
Yeah.
But it's really changing a lot at NIH now.
What else would you be looking at except therapeutic purposes?
Addictive, potential, negative consequences of use. That's primarily where a lot of the focus has been in the past.
And have we learned anything? Is there good evidence about the addictive qualities of marijuana?
I think it kind of depends on who you ask. People in the addiction world will say that it is does qualify as being an addictive drug. However, there's a lot of people who kind of disagree with that. I think some of it is in terms of how you want to define withdrawal and that kind of thing. And the fact that you don't have lethal overdoses, I think, is something that also kind of changes people's opinions a bit.
Emily, what are the questions that people most often have when they're, wading into this new universe?
More or less, they ask, is it addictive? Are there, crazy side effects? One of the main questions I've gotten recently is, will this cannabis medication interact with my, regularly prescribed actual pharmaceutical medication? We've had a lot of different questions as far as, strain specific, what should I take, topical, edible, oil? There's so many different options, and especially here in Ohio, because we can't combust it, we can't smoke it.
Right.
So more or less, a lot of the questions are, okay, well, I have this medical card now. What are the ways that I can use it to help my body?
Yeah. Professor Lindley, the issue of smoking marijuana, one way or the other. I mean, it's different when you smoke it, mm-hmm, than when you eat it, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Why is it different?
Well, it gets metabolized completely differently. So you have more of a instant onset with smoking. It goes straight into your lungs and has an instant effect that starts within probably just a couple of minutes and then doesn't last as long. Whereas oral route, it has to have a first metabolism and go through. So it takes longer for it to go into effect, but then the effects of it will also continue longer.
You have patients who use medical marijuana, right?
We do, yes.
Yeah. What have you learned about it, I guess, anecdotally, outside of the research realm, about how it's working?
Well, we actually did a survey in 2012 in our clinic to get some information. This is when it was only medically legal. We didn't have recreation at that point. And we asked our patients about it, and we found that at that point, about 12% of our patients said they were using a cannabis product for their pain. And we asked them about how it was working, and 85% said it at least moderately or very much was relieving their chronic spine pain. And then we asked them about how it compared to their medications, and almost 80% said it was at least equal to, if not better, than their opioids. So they, pretty overwhelmingly felt like it was working very well for them.
Does that suggest to you that the opioids they were taking was kind of like, forgive the reference, but like overkill? Like they didn't need that much?
Well, I think this represents some patients who were probably not very satisfied with how their opioids were working, given that they were seeking an alternative for it. So, and we know that that's the case, that a lot of patients really aren't wanting to start on opioids because they are afraid of getting addicted to it and the overdose potential.
And was there any concern as a physician that once marijuana became recreationally legal in Colorado, that it would, eclipse the benefits and the growing science of medical marijuana?
Well, first I want to point out I'm actually not an MD, I'm a PhD. So, just to clarify there. And I think that there's definitely some hesitation among medical professionals. We don't want to necessarily encourage people to take something when we don't really have any scientific evidence of it. But I would say that at least among the people that I work with, physicians and providers, they're mostly open to it. And they're not telling overall their patients not to try it. They just can't really give them any real recommendations, which is, unfortunate. And that's why we really wanted to get into this research area so that we could try to provide some of that evidence. And instead of having our patients go to dispensaries and having the bud tenders there being the ones giving them the advice on what they should be taking for their chronic pain condition.
And Emily Romack, has that been a concern of yours as an advocate of medical marijuana, that it's the benefits and the kind of the understanding of it is going to be eclipsed by recreational use?
Yeah, it's interesting. Here in Ohio, being a conservative state, my personal belief on it is I was happy that we went medical first. I think having medical cannabis first in these states, it kind of gives the respect to the plant that it needs as far as being respected medically in the medical field and just in the general public as well. And it kind of opens up the discussion about it being medically beneficial to patients with, the chronic illness and debilitating diseases. It's really, it gives that respect to it. Mm-hmm. We all know recreation. We've had that out in the West Coast, recreationally, everyone knows, you can do that. But as far as the medical aspects of it, it really opens up the conversation to be able to educate and talk about it and to be able to, truly begin to study this plant for what it is, medically beneficial.
And what about the cost of it?
So the cost of it ranges, and especially when states first go online like Ohio, the costs are going to be generally probably pretty high just because there's such, there isn't as much product initially.
It's a supply and demand.
Supply and demand. Yeah, absolutely.
And in Colorado, Professor Lindley, I know it's not your job, but I mean, is it covered by insurance? Are some insurance companies covering it now yet?
No, there's no insurance coverage that I'm aware of.
Is that basically, Emily, then because of the liability issues at the federal level?
Yeah, because it's still considered Schedule I, insurance companies don't really want to touch it yet.
And Dr. Lindley, the research you do is on marijuana that's produced in Colorado, right?
No, we are required, if you're getting plant material, to get from the only federally legal source for research, which is from the National Institute of Drug Abuse. They have a local crop that's grown at the University of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. Do they have a local crop? Do they have all the different kinds of strains that you're interested in looking at?
They do have different, so you can get different percentages of, for example, THC or CBD. So they're developing now a much wider profile of different cannabinoid concentrations that you can use to try to mimic to some extent what's being available in the dispensaries locally.
Because it's a Schedule One, that's the only place you can legally get it to research it. That sounds like a monopoly to me, too, though. Is it expensive to do research on marijuana?
It's expensive in terms of doing a clinical trial, but not from actually obtaining the product from the government. No.
Okay, it's relatively thing. And you're looking at it compared to oxycodone. How's it stacking up so far?
You know, we're still enrolling now, yeah. So we don't have any data to present on that. So
How will you give me a little bit longer? Yeah, sure. How are you going to conduct the research? How does it work?
So what we're doing right now is we're kind of starting with the first step, which is what's been done in the literature with some of the neuropathic studies that I was mentioning.
Yeah.
So we're really just looking at acute administration, so single dosing. So all of our patients and participants, they come in for three separate study visits. And on one, they get the active cannabis, so they use vaporized cannabis. And then they get a placebo of the oxycodone, so just a sugar pill. And then on one of their visits, it's their active oxycodone day, and then they vaporize. Actually, we have placebo cannabis, so where the product that we get from NIDA, they actually extract the cannabinoids out of it, mm-hmm. So they're not getting any active drug, and then a placebo day. So, and then after they do their drug administration, they stay with us for about 4 hours afterwards, and we do a variety of different measures and, you know, measure their pain, that type of thing.
And so is the vaping the closest thing you can get to combustion?
Yeah, we definitely didn't want to do smoked a lot of reasons. One, our campus is smoke-free, so it wasn't even an option for us. But, you know, being in medical profession, that's not something that we would ever really want to advocate
for. The do-no-harm kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's clear that smoking marijuana is still hard on the lungs, whether you're doing it for your medical reasons or not.
Exactly.
Yeah. Dr. Lindley, I want to thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time. Professor Lindley, I should say.
Thank you for having me on.
That's Emily Lindley. She's an assistant professor at the University of Colorado. She's kicking off a study on the effects of cannabis versus oxycodone. Emily Romack is going to stay with us. She's CEO of Compassionate Alternatives. It's a Columbus nonprofit focused on helping patients access marijuana across the country. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. Ohio residents who have secured a medical marijuana card soon will be able to buy the edibles, pills, and vapor-style medicine in dispensaries. Within the month, they say at least plant-based medical marijuana will be available. We're talking about medical marijuana in Ohio. It's getting close now. Still with us is CEO of Compassionate Alternatives. That's a Columbus nonprofit focused on helping patients access marijuana, Emily Romack. Thanks again, Emily, for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
And also joining us now, Dr. Joel Simmons. He's a radiation oncologist in Columbus and a recommending physician in Ohio. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the show, Dr. Simmons.
Thanks for having me.
How did you decide to seek the authorization to recommend medical marijuana?
It's something I've always been interested in. I practiced in St. Louis area before I came here over actually on the Illinois side. Mm-hmm. And when it passed in Illinois, I was actually just checking like every month, like when could I get my recommendation? When could I get my certificate to recommend? And, I wound up coming back to Ohio, before I actually could get my certificate. But when I got back to town, then, you know, House Bill 523 had passed. And so it kind of started all over again in terms of my interest. So just with my background in oncology, it's really normal for me and the way I was brought up, marijuana use, whether it's self-medicating or recreational, was pretty normal for me. So it just was nothing that was out of the ordinary for me.
What was the process like to get the authorization to be a to make recommendations?
It's fairly fairly simple, I guess I would say, but it does take some motivation for physicians. So they need to have an interest and a desire. And then the education piece is just an online process. You do have to pay money for your courses, but you have to take so many hours. I think it's listed as like 2 hours online. That doesn't make sense to me. I wound up doing like 13 hours, so I'm not sure that that's really accurate. But you have to do online continuing medical education. So we need continuing medical education anyway to keep our regular full state medical license active. So those credits go towards that, but it's focused on medical marijuana. And so, you know, again, it takes interest, initiative, doing the online courses, and then you get your certificate.
There is an issue of affirmative defense for certain marijuana-related crimes. What are your legal liabilities? What are you taking any risks in doing this?
I'm not aware of any risks. I mean, of course, I'm fully insured and all sorts of business insurance and things of that nature, but I'm not aware of any risks. You know, technically, we're all dealing in an industry that has a federally illegal drug, so I'm sure there's risks associated with that. But I'm not aware of any significant risks.
Well, Emily Romick,
You know, as far as patient access, you know, I can't really speak for the doctors specifically, but as far as from the patient standpoint, it's important for, you know, if you're planning on using medical marijuana, it's important for you to get your card so that way you do have the affirmative defense, that you are able to legally have it on your person, you know, just in general with the amount allowed by law.
And Dr. Simmons, how do you feel about the idea of recommending versus prescribing as a physician?
Well, there was a good, you know, there's a good article that was in the Dispatch, I think it was yesterday, that folks can take a look at that really goes in depth into the whole recommendation versus prescribing. So you can't prescribe a federally illegal substance. You can't prescribe a Schedule I substance. So that's the whole recommendation loophole. I think it's a good thing. You know, I've been in places, I went to a national medical marijuana Physicians Association meeting at the end of last year, and there were a lot of, it was down in Florida, and probably 80-85% of the docs were Florida prescribers, recommenders. And they expressed a lot of, there were a lot of people standing up and just saying how, you know, the dispensaries aren't following what I'm saying. You know, they're not, you know, they were really descriptive in what they were telling patients, to advising patients to use. And the patients would walk out of the dispensaries with something totally different. And these physicians were in an uproar. And so, you know, that's part, you know, in Ohio's program, when we have the registry, we're allowed to kind of put some descriptors in there if we want to, in terms of what we suggest that people can use, but it's not required for physicians to do that. And I actually had put up a comment on that article, the prescription versus the recommendation, that kind of stated, you know, this whole program, I think one of the big benefits is the fact that it takes that control out of the physician's hands and puts it into the patient's hands.
Okay.
So that they have more control over what they're doing, particularly when the vast majority of these patients, we're going to be recommending mainly for pain. Okay, so the vast majority of recommendations will be made for pain control. So, you know, it kind of puts that managing your pain into the hands of the patients, as opposed to a doctor telling you to take two of these twice a day and then this, that, the other. It allows the patients to have that control. So to me, that's a benefit.
Just to be clear, though, you can't overdose on marijuana.
I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
As someone who has eaten marijuana overdose. You know, there are no marijuana-related deaths. Direct deaths to marijuana, and it has to do with the lack of cannabinoid receptors in the brainstem. So your breathing, your respiratory rate, and your heart function, those things aren't impacted like opiates. That's why people die, because there are receptors in the brainstem for those. But for cannabinoids, there are not. So that's why people don't die from it. But you can have too much THC in your system, and there are some significant side effects to that would put you in the hospital, because I've been there with folks with that.
Okay. All right. Let's see. I've got a couple of questions. Jim in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I have a question for Emily. I want to know whether or not there are any CBD trials for combat injured veterans going on locally?
CBD trials, that's a great question. Thank you. For CBD trials for what exactly? For veterans?
For combat veterans.
Trial in what context?
Well, I mean, he would like to use it. He's got 22 combat injuries, Purple Heart and a Bronze Star, but he, to touch on the affirmative defense, he doesn't particularly want to get busted for it until Ohio gets their act together.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So what do you suggest?
You know, legally, because, you know, federally they did pass the hemp bill, which now essentially makes CBD legal throughout the country. Ohio is kind of in an interesting position right now. You know, the Ohio Pharmacy Board came out and said that, you know, CBD is illegal. You know, but then, you know, there's a lot of shops and other...
You can get it all over
the
place.
So, I mean, it really kind of is kind of like a weird kind of gray area that Ohio is in right now specifically. You know, as far as CBD, you can essentially get it anywhere. You just have to make sure that the CBD product that you are getting is organic, it's natural. You really want to research the brand that you are purchasing it from.
And otherwise, you can get a card, a medical marijuana
medical
card.
Medical marijuana card,
and
exactly.
And talk to a physician like our other guest, Dr. Joel Simmons. Jim, hopefully that helped. Dr. Simmons, when you're talking to people and making recommendations, what kinds of questions are popping up? What are you hearing from patients about what they want? What are they questioning?
There's a big range of questions, and I think it probably starts out from just their level of experience. I anticipated most of the early people coming in for their cards would be folks who were self-medicating. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's been a decent amount, but there also have been a decent amount who just are just interested in trying something new and are tired of opiates. So, you know, the questions are kind of, you know, the question number one for everybody is, when is it going to be here? You know, and that's mm-hmm. been the first question everyone's been asking.
Right.
You know, we get a lot of... Well, before people even come through the door, it's a lot of, does insurance cover it? Which, of course, with it being federally illegal, the whole gamut of the program is typically out of pocket from getting your visit to getting your medication from the dispensary.
Hmm.
It's you know, those are, I'd say, the top questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Emily?
I would say, you know, another part of our nonprofit Compassion Alternatives, what we are striving to do is education. And I think a lot of this, you know, being very patient focused, patients do need to be educated on the benefits of it, you know, as far as what's going to be available at the dispensaries, you know, because they can go to doctors and clinics all over the state and, like, kind of like what we touched on before, you know, some of these doctors will have an idea of what to tell you to take or not take. And some doctors will just write you the recommendation and send you out the door. So one of the things our nonprofit does is we do educational classes, and we're actually going to have a class coming up next month, February 17th, it's a Sunday, that'll be our next class. It'll be with Sebastian Cott out of Atlanta, and he does a lot of international and national education classes, but that's one of the things that, especially from our point of view, is to really make sure we get that education out there to educate everybody, you know, even from doctors, patients, industry professionals.
Okay. Well, we'll post a link to the Compassionate Alternatives website so that folks can check that out on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Pat in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Pat.
I just wanted to say that several years ago, my next-door neighbor was dying of cancer, and she was in the hospital. She was in a lot of pain, and her doctor, somehow, I don't know how he prescribed it, but he prescribed medical marijuana for her, and she said it did it didn't alleviate the pain at all.
Hmm.
It didn't make the pain go away.
Was she in a hospital in Ohio?
That was just one. That's okay. Just one case.
Pat, was she in Ohio?
Yes, she was in Ohio,
right.
In the hospital here in I think at Riverside Methodist Hospital, and. Somehow her doctor prescribed medical marijuana
they
for
couldn't
her.
Couldn't have prescribed it because it's illegal, but she got access to it. You know,
I'd like to take that one.
Yeah, Dr. Simmons. Yeah, go for it.
I love when I hear this because, you know, we talk about this whole blanket term of marijuana. It's just talked about as one thing, marijuana. Yep. That's almost like saying pain medication. My doctor gave me pain medication and it didn't work. And so when someone says that, what's your first thought? You didn't have the right pain medication. And so, you know, there's this huge spectrum of different strains that are available and different means of ingestion. And so when someone has tried something that hasn't supposedly worked, they just haven't gotten to the right medication in my mind.
Exactly. And that's partly what we do also with our education is really, truly, you know, breaking down the strains and really figuring out what exactly is going to work for that specific patient in their own situation.
How long have, I say we kind of, how long has, have all these different strains been known about, Dr. Simmons?
Hundreds and thousands of years.
I would say probably the past 10 years, it's when really the majority of research has been done on really perfecting these strains and truly figuring out what strain specific it's.
And I know, I mean, what do we know about why different strains do different things? I mean, what can we compare it to, Dr. Simmons, for people? I'm trying to get a grip on how many different kinds there are.
Well, I think there's, you know, we talk about the three major components, and Emily has more hands-on experience with this than I do, but in general, and how I educate patients is we talk about the three main components, the three major cannabinoids, which are THC. So that's a very, very potent anti-inflammatory component, more potent than steroids. It can actually really help with pain control, but at certain levels, it can make you high. So that's one of the cannabinoids that we look at. We look at the different levels of that and the different strains. CBD is what everyone talks about, which is also a potent anti-inflammatory that does not make you high. And so that's why there's a lot of talk and interest in the isolates of the CBD. And so that's an important component. Then the terpenes are the other large component, most well-known component. And that gives a lot of the flavor and odor to the medication. And so all these three things interact together in what they call an entourage effect. And so they kind of work synergistically is the way I would say. And so that's what we're trying to figure out is the different ratios and the different interactions. And that's what composes the main active medical ingredients in the plant.
And there's just a continuum along on each score. I'm going to take another question real quick. Fran, we're just about out of time, but I wanted to get your question in. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. My question is, what patient education materials have been developed that outline side effects, possible contraindications, impairment warnings, et cetera? Okay. And who has developed these patient education materials, if they exist?
All right. So, Emily Ramek, what's out there?
That's a great question. You know, we are currently working with, you know, the Cleveland School of Cannabis, which is located up in Independence, Leaf Medic, Dr. Karen Korn that was on earlier. They're currently producing educational materials as well. And then the dispensaries themselves will have on the packaging labels themselves on each individual product, you know, the breakdown of THC, CBD, and all the chemical components.
That's authorized by the state.
That's authorized by the state. Okay. And it'll say exactly where, you know, obviously from the seed to sale program, you know, it'll say specifically, you know, what the strain is, you know, all the chemical breakdown of what is in that, you know, if it was been used with pesticides or not, and more or less have, you know, warnings on that specifically.
All right, Emily Ramek, I want to thank you for joining us today. I'm sure we'll talk again
This
rolls out. Emily Ramek is CEO of Compassionate Alternatives. It's a Columbus nonprofit focused on helping patients access medical marijuana. Also, Dr. Joel Simmons, thanks so much for joining us, Dr. Simmons.
I appreciate it. I'll put a little plug in there. I have the Ohio Herbal Clinic, and so that's where patients can come and get their recommendations. And we do a lot of that education in the office also with our patients.
Okay. Dr. Joel Simmons, radiation oncologist and recommending physician. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.